The smartest guys around are about to break it down like they've won the game a million times.
Well, actually, they didn't really win the game at all.
Survivor know-it-alls.
Yes, that's right. The Survivor Know-It-Alls are back after a double episode, or at least one and a half episodes of Survivor, in a two-hour episode tonight. Stephen Fishback.
Rob, first of all, I want to apologize. I'm running a little bit late. I actually got a little confused because I know that we do this once a week. And I was like, well, what does that mean? Is that like 8 days? Is that 13 days?
Funny, so yeah.
I was ready. I was ready tomorrow. I was going to be ready tomorrow. Yeah.
That was a hilarious segment with Tony and Jeremy of how many days is a week. That was great. A little taste of what goes on Twitter between those two. But anyway, happy to be here with you, Stephen, as we sit on the precipice of the Survivor Winners at War, the greatest season, 1 week away from finding out who is the ultimate winner.
I think it's pretty dangerous to say during the season that it's the greatest season. It's like he hasn't even seen Heroes versus Villains.
Yeah, yeah. You know, that they said it was the greatest season before the season even started. So,
listen, I think it's possible this will slip into the top 20.
No, it's been a really great season.
It's been a good season. It's been a fine season. I wouldn't in the top five, though. Not in the top five.
Not even in the top five.
No, the top five is like a very rarefied. That's rarefied air. That's Winners at War.
What's your top five?
Okay, probably Cagayan. I'm sorry, I didn't mean that's Heroes versus Villains. You got Fans versus Favorites in that mix. I mean, everyone loves season 31 Cambodia. I mean, I think Survivor China is better than this season. I certainly would put Survivor Tokenchines, one of the greats. David versus Goliath, I would put above certainly David versus Goliath above the season. I mean, we're already getting to the lower echelons of the top 10, and I honestly am not sure that this would qualify as top 10.
I think we're probably lands in the back half of the top 10. Probably.
Why? Well, what has been like the great memorable things that have happened on this season?
Well, I don't know if this is what we want to do a minute into this recap tonight. We have 2 hours. Let's run. We have all summer and maybe beyond to rank this season of Survivor, Stephen Fishback.
No, I can't do that.
Stephen, how's everything going by you?
Things are good. How are you?
Yeah, very good. Pumped up after tonight's episode. Weird structure. We'll get into all of that. But Stephen, I'm actually, before we talk about Survivor, I just want to say, you know, we've been talking about this at the end of the shows, but I do want to say just at the top of the show tonight, I'm just really proud of the Rob Has a Podcast community, because that I came into the month of April with a goal to raise money for directrelief.org to raise money for PPE for doctors and nurses. And I talked about how over the course of the month of April that we were going to be taking all of our new patron contributions. We're going to be donating those to charity. I was going to be making a matching contribution. We also started a GoFundMe as well. And I had said last week that I wanted to see that we raised $20,000 for directrelief.org. And I can tell you at this hour, we have raised over $21,000 for directrelief.org.
That's huge.
That is $10,124 from the patron pledges, which were donated, and then my including my matching contribution, that's $10,124. And then you guys on our GoFundMe raised an additional $11,050. So I'm just really proud of what we've been able to accomplish over these last 5 weeks. Really incredible stuff that we've been able to raise all that money for directrelief.org over these last 5 weeks, Stephen.
That's incredible, Rob.
I really appreciate it so much that the community was so moved by what we were trying to do. Really appreciate all of the support for a great cause like directrelief.org, getting all that PPE to doctors and nurses over these last 5 weeks. So thanks for your help with that to everybody out there listening. All right, Steven, let's talk about Survivor. Big night. Jeremy goes out in the first hour. Nick in
terrible.
The second hour. What's terrible part?
Jeremy going out. It's terrible. It's terrible what happened. I mean, you know, I don't think Jeremy could have made it to the end. It sure seems like people were committed to taking him out. But I was very upset.
Yeah. Interestingly, Jeremy ends up, you know, so much of Jeremy's story over these last couple of seasons has been Jeremy playing advantages for other people, people playing advantages on Jeremy. This time it was Michelle's coin flip comes up right, but just maybe did not push hard enough for Michelle to play the coin on him this time.
But she would have gone home had had the coin flip been on him. He would have been safe. However, then it would have been a 2-2 split.
Two
votes on Ben, two votes on her. There would have been a revote, and the revotes obviously would have like gone towards her.
Is that for definite?
What does for definite mean? I mean, yes, that's how the. I think so. When there's a tie vote, right? There's a revote, and okay. Then
don't make it like it's a stupid question.
No. There's no stupid questions. Just stupid co-hosts.
Oh, come on.
Wait. I honestly wasn't sure what you were asking. I'm still not sure what you're asking.
I was asking that if you had already worked out the numbers that on a revote, if people like Nick or other people on the fence right. might have voted out Michelle in that spot over Ben, since Ben was also a person who was up for consideration to be voted out in this episode. And Tony,
yeah, I definitely don't know,
even considered blindsiding him because of him having an idol and potentially his fire making abilities.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And I'm sorry, I truly was not trying to be dismissive. I was literally just asking you what you were asking, because I wasn't sure if you meant like the mechanics of the game or the way the votes were coming down. And let's talk about those votes. Like, so Jeremy would be able to vote, presumably he's voting for, like, so Michelle can't vote in this situation and Ben can't vote in this situation, right? That leaves Jeremy, Tony, Sarah, and Nick. And we think we know Jeremy is voting for Ben. You know, Nick, we don't know where he's going. We assume Tony and Sarah are probably voting for Michelle here. My guess is Nick goes Michelle in that situation. Because he was part of a vote split on Jeremy and Michelle. It would be very weird for him to then just like back it up and switch sides entirely.
Yeah, I think that Tony, Sarah, and Denise, at the very least, I think are probably still on. Still want to keep Ben around, whereas Nick might be wanting to keep Michelle around. Something that they at least had a working relationship. But who knows? It does seem like that. You know, I hadn't even thought that through in terms of Michelle being the person who could have gone out on a revote after the coin flip.
Oh, I think so for sure. I mean, that was the impression I got, right? Like typically with like the split vote, that's the idea. If someone plays an idol, then we just stack votes on the other person. And my assumption was just that majority alliance would hang tight and vote, you know, down the line for Michelle.
Yeah. What'd you think about Michelle tossing the coin? Is that a legal coin toss?
Yeah, that was not a flip. That was not a flip. That was sort of like a lob.
Jeff should have been the one to flip the coin. Yeah. I feel like that. I was playing like a board game with my kid and they believe me, they do this. So it's like, they're like, all right, I need this number. And they just sort of like just gently like toss the dice on the side up that they want. And like,
exactly.
Let's see, like if this is Vegas and this is the craps table, you got to hit the back of the board here.
Yeah, you hold your kids to account, you're saying. You're saying Jeff is not holding the Survivor contestants to the same standard that you're holding your kids to.
I mean, in the NFL, like when it's the coin flip, they don't say to the all right, Sam Darnold, here, you flip the coin for yourself. I mean, call it in the air. I mean, I think that's how a coin flip should work.
That's so Sam Darnold.
Yeah.
Classic Sam Darnold.
Good for Michelle, though. Good for Michelle. I don't know if she practiced it, if she knew that they were going to, if she was going to be the one to flip the coin.
That should not have counted. I completely agree. But yeah, maybe she was hoping some razzle dazzle with like, you know, Jeff would be so in the moment. Maybe he was. Maybe he was just like so in the moment.
Great night for Michelle, though.
Great night for Michelle.
Yeah. Yeah. Michelle.
This is one of Michelle's all-time nights.
I mean, Michelle is in like the Korong zone where now, you know, don't forget about Michelle at your own peril, because now.
Don't sleep on Michelle.
Yeah, don't sleep on Michelle. She's locked in, won the immunity here at the first of our final sixes. And now, she's potentially on the upswing.
Yeah. I mean, what a great fun thing that was, where, I mean, Nick effectively eliminated himself from the game.
Yeah. To talk that through with me, that, ultimately he ends up, are you saying he should have used the disadvantage on Michelle?
Well, I mean, it just seemed like, you know, I think
Nick had the right idea where I really thought that this plan was going to work. I thought that Ben was going to get voted out. I think that maybe the mistake was that not trying to play up enough to Ben, potentially, like, boy, who would be crazy enough to play a disadvantage like that? Like, this is so, like, I'm getting real tired of Tony with all his advantages and tricks that he's doing. Like, I felt like that maybe he didn't push that button hard enough, but I thought he had the right idea, Nick.
Yeah. It did seem like everyone's attempts at inceptions tonight just did not work at all. You had Ben trying to create strife between Jeremy and Michelle. That was sort of a non-starter. Like, Denise's like weird thing was like, people were like, yeah, okay, whatever. Like, you know, there was no like that, mm-hmm. that dissembling didn't work. Like, people are trying hard to be tricksy, but like, these people have like played enough
They've seen through it. They've seen through it. Did you feel like that Nick did something in particular that led to his own demise? Because I actually was surprised that it was Nick.
I mean, just the pure causality, right? Like, it looked like Ben probably would have won that challenge had he not had that major disadvantage. I mean, who knows, right? Who knows? Mm-hmm. The world is infinitely confusing. Or, right, infinite, you know, it's like a butterfly effect.
So Ben winning would have caused Michelle to go, to be voted out there.
That was my read on the episode, was that Nick gave the disadvantage to Ben. Ben looked like he would have won because he was very close even with that disadvantage. And had Ben won, it just seems like Michelle would have gone home. That being said, like, Nick still, it's like the final 6/6.5. And Nick still needs to put himself in like a position to win. So like, for, you know, this question that Michelle asked him at the midpoint of the episode of like, how the hell are we getting to the end?
Yeah.
Like, he needed to do something.
If anything, I think Nick's mistake in this episode, I mean, based on these 2 hours being strung together, maybe it shines more of a spotlight on it, was that it seems like that the decision to vote for Jeremy and not Ben at that first tribal council seemed like it led directly to this, where Ben says, I can't beat Jeremy. But Michelle says, yeah, but now we have no shot to get to the end.
Yeah, and that really seemed, well, that's definitely the case for Nick, but I mean, it did seem like he really shut the door on all their options. I mean, it's hard, you know, we see very clearly that Ben, Sarah, and Tony have this, you know, unbreakable, solid final three. Maybe that's not as clear to Nick. Michelle seems to see it, right? We see that Denise and Ben are super tight, and that therefore, like, that's kind of the presumptive final four. Yeah, so, like, getting rid of Jeremy when he could take out Ben is, like, I mean, I get the fear that you can't beat Jeremy and no one can beat Jeremy, but, you know, having Jeremy there as someone who, you can take out later, you know, there's only a few votes left, but like, it does seem like he should have kept Jeremy around just to swing the votes a different way. I don't know. I mean, it's easy to say now, having seen the episode, you know, we have such a clear perception of where the lines are drawn. They obviously don't have that.
Yeah. Throughout the 2 hours, like, I really thought that Ben was going to be one of the two people to go home in this episode, especially when we got to the point. I thought that Nick made such a really good point about the fire making challenge of like, how are we stopping Ben here? What are we doing? Is it just Tony and Sarah are just on board with like, hey, Ben's not getting our vote, any votes, where that we've got, if it's the three of us in the end, I can live with that.
Yeah. I mean, what I didn't get was, you know, how it went back to Nick, because it looked like, and I want your perspective on this. It looked like, you know, Nick had talked through it with, you know, Tony and convinced him that it needed to be Ben. So Tony was like, it's got to be Ben. Then Tony was like, no, wait, Tony does his tree shack thing and is thinks, oh, no, wait, it's got to be Denise. And then suddenly it's back to Nick with like, what about the intermediate girl? Why did it, you know, skip Ben? You know, why didn't it go back and sit on Ben for a little bit?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't really know what the imminent threat was about Nick that you had, you know, heard a lot of like negative things from the other players throughout the season. You heard Ben tonight talking about how it's not working. He's trying to play both sides, that people, everybody sees what he's doing. And then Sarah said, well, he's the underdog. And that seemed like that was the one piece of information that we got as to say, like, well, he could be potentially somebody who ends up being, you know, somebody that the jury could rally around.
Yeah, that's, I mean, and that's a really compelling point because I thought that was a really smart observation. I mean, we started the episode with Tony kind of being dismissive of that aspect of Nick's game, right? That everyone sees him scheming and but it is a really compelling point that Sarah makes that like the jury really does root for the person who is opposing the people who vote them out. And Tony voted everyone out. As Michelle pointed out, he's sort of an impossible person to beat at this point in the game. Did you think, I mean, we're sort of jumping around a lot here and did you think that Sarah was foolish to dismiss that?
Which thing?
That Michelle came to her and said, you know,
I thought that was a little hasty for Sarah to go back to the group and say, can you believe what Michelle is saying to me? Without even like, let me sit with that for a second. Or, you know, again, you've played more recently than I have. Is that the kind of thing where then if she does not go back and report that immediately, is it more suspicious?
Right. I guess so. You can't be like, Michelle said this to me like last week. And you don't want to be tarred, you know, with that alliance. Like you don't want to be like painted with like the perspective of being now like, you know, potentially dangerous with Michelle, but from our perspective, Sarah can't be Tony, right? Like from what I'm watching, or I mean, I wonder if from Sarah's perspective, Sarah can be Tony. I mean, what do you think? The game I'm watching, Tony seems to, you know, be winning all these immunities. He seems to control the majority of the votes. You know, Sarah seems to have these really deep, perhaps deeper relationships with people, but just in terms of what Modern Survivor is going to reward, like what's your perspective?
I mean, I think that Sarah feels like that she can probably beat Tony at the final tribal council. Yes, Tony might have more flash and more immunity wins, but I think that Sarah probably feels like, hey, I've made deeper bonds with people throughout the course of the game. People like Sophie, people like Kim, you know, all these people along the way that I've been with, you know, at from DeKal to, you know, even like, you know, Adam or Ben, you know, maybe she feels like that. How many people does Tony have? If we have sort of very similar resumes, I have better relationships with people than Tony has. And that's not to say that maybe she isn't thinking about like, OK, maybe at the final five, nor maybe put Tony into the fire and see what ultimately happens if he somehow doesn't get to the final.
Yeah. I agree.
But it does seem like Sarah has not talked with anybody at any point about, you know, she was in a conversation with Denise and Ben about, and maybe that's her plan of like, hey, I'll go to the fire making, you know, keep Ben around till four. Ben, you know, makes the, Ben goes into the fire making with Tony, maybe knocks Tony out in that way. And it's not really like she got the blood on her hand.
Yeah. I mean, I that's such a high risk play, you know, especially with someone coming back from Edge, you know, is their assumption that going to be that person is coming back into the game with an idol? Like they have to assume, right? That there's a,
I don't know if they just saw the Edge of Extinction. So I think they would have to think that, somebody is coming back with something this time around. They're not given an idol, but they are able to buy one because of the fire tokens. If it's one of the people that's coming back, potentially with an idol, Natalie, Tyson, Boston Rob. So those are three of the likeliest choices. So it's not crazy to think the person that's coming back in will have an idol.
Yeah. And especially like, you know, it just depends like what Tyson has kind of told them about, you know, what the dynamics are on the edge. Like he's really, mm-hmm. he's sort of the key source of all of their information, I guess. Is now the time to write a note to the edge?
I think it's closed. Yeah. I think that Denise got the last thing off the shelves of off the Advantage menu. Yeah. Let's try to talk through the two votes tonight a little bit in order in terms of the final seven vote, Jeremy's last stand. Do you feel like that Jeremy and Michelle had the right approach here?
What do you mean by the right approach?
Do you like ultimately what they tried to do to get on board with going after Ben one last time after they had sussed out that Ben was trying to turn the two of them against each other?
So like, help me walk, because that was a little bit, there was a lot that happened there. It seemed like they were going to put all the votes on Nick, right? And then Nick won immunity. And then was there a viable plan to go after Denise in that situation? I mean, was there some other possibility? Because I'm actually having trouble remembering now. Like,
there was a lot. It was sort of disjointed in terms of where we got, like, you know, 30 minutes in and we went to that first tribal council. And then we had a very long period of time at tribal council. It was like, really, really drawn out tribal council segment for something that was not seemingly a live tribal. We spent a whole segment at tribal council.
Yeah. Wait.
And it was a lot of talking about like, we were talking about like your persona.
Yeah. There was a lot of like, yeah. And a lot of like, you know, the fears of living up to what, you know, people perceive of you. And then there was like some of the trauma. And I actually thought that was cool that they got into that. It was very unusual, but I thought it was really neat that they talked about how, you know, these people go home and then they have like real, you know, there's real trauma from this show in terms of people's, you know, mm-hmm. people's coworkers, people's relationships. I thought it was really neat that they kind of addressed that, because I can't really think of another time that they've done that. And, you know, I was being glib at the top of the show about having there no big moments in this season. But I actually thought that was a really interesting, cool moment in this season.
Yeah, I think that this was just a weird night for the show in terms of
timing.
You know, I think that originally that this was probably going to be a 1 hour episode, and then they had the opportunity to do 2 hours with this. And I'm not sure if the issues with the scheduling or the coronavirus ended up like giving them that opportunity. And it seemed like that this is one of the areas that they kind of stretched out. Like normally we get a much more truncated version of Tribal Council, where I think this was probably like a 90-minute episode that they ended up stretching out to 2 hours because they had the time tonight.
Yeah, I agree, because there were like that Tony Jeremy conversation about the time of day or you know how long a week is was super attenuated. Then there was also the like tribal council itself. Although like the strategy of the episode was really short, which I think kind of maybe is a testament to your idea that maybe it was like initially supposed to be a 90-minute episode or even like a double elimination within an hour. And then you had like obviously that extremely padded like final act in terms of like the edge and everything,
right.
and then like the retrospective, which I guess they're also, you know, there's so much to get to in the finale, they're probably putting I think they probably put a big chunk of stuff into this, but
yeah. And again, not a complaint, because that they probably would have, this would have been just stuff we would have never seen.
Yeah.
So I think we just had maybe an expectation of like this was going to be like a jam-packed 2 hours. And it was, you know, a little bit of like a, more like a 90-minute episode that kind of got a little stretched.
Yeah. I completely agree. I mean, it was fun. I really enjoyed it. It was a lot of like fun stuff that happened. Like you said, like it's unusual to see them talking about things like, you know, like trauma or like their persona, mm-hmm. or like living up to, you know, this idea of themselves, or even, you know, Jeff has asked in the past, like that question about like, yo, you're talking to me, you're talking to the audience at home, you're talking to your tribe mates. Like, isn't that confusing? So, but it's still like an interesting, like to me, that's like the most interesting part of the show is the, like the human inside, like struggling with all of those different demands of like, how do I reach these, you know, three audiences and like perform my identity in these three different ways.
So at that final seven vote, I just want to talk through a couple of the other perspectives that we had from these different players. For Tony, I thought this was actually really cool that, Sarah is the one who says, okay, we need to go after Nick. We need to get Ben on board with this. And that was a really great sort of like Jedi moment with Sarah talking with Ben of like, we need to let Ben feel like he's driving the car. And then she kind of turns Ben around to the point where Ben is pitching Tony like, hey, what about Nick? And Tony's like, if you want to, Ben, I'll follow your lead. Yeah. If you want to, I trust you. I trust your gut. That was really fun. But then after Nick wins that immunity challenge, did you think that the timing was right for Tony to finally take out Jeremy after he had kept him around for so long?
I mean, Tony's concern there is still really valid, right? Which is that, if we eliminate Jeremy here, then we have to contend with the potential of a Michelle, Nick, Denise situation. Although Denise, did not seem to be a real consideration for her.
Yeah, it was. Denise has been in a weird spot where that it seemed like that last week she was very much dug in with she made a final three with Michelle and Nick and said, hey, let's be the final three. Seemed very dug in with Kim to the point where she did not even want to talk with Jeremy anymore. And I think that she addressed that a little bit in this episode where she talked about a couple of times. Was it Endure and Let Go?
Endure.
Yeah, Endure and Let Go, which I thought, I don't know if that was the name of the episode. I feel like it should have been.
No, it was the penultimate. It was Jeremy had it. It was like a Jeremy quote from the very beginning. It was like the penultimate battle or something.
A little on the nose, I thought.
Endure and Let Go would have been a good title.
It's going to be the title of Denise's biography. All right, do you think she got the tattoos?
No, she said she's never going to get tattoos.
She said she's never going to get tattoos, but if she does, she's going to get on Endure and Let Go. And I thought it was a full circle moment because Denise comes into the Survivor universe where she's on the beach with Zane Knight. And she's talking about all of Zane's tattoos and how she can tell so much about him by analyzing his tattoos.
Yeah. And so she's her journey is now imitating Zane. Like that's the end point of Denise's journey.
Yes, where future Denise can look at herself as a tattoo of, Endure and Let Go. You must have been through two very powerful experiences that caused you to get those tattoos that say Endure and Let Go.
So is Zane future Let's Denise? Go. Like, is there some sort of transmogrification?
I don't know. Yes, Zane is future Denise.
So I did, Denise is one who I will be most curious to hear her end of the game interview because from, where she is strategically, we have not been presented a coherent portrait. At one point in the game, she was like super tight with Jeremy to the point she's playing an idol for him. Then it seems like she's completely over Jeremy. Now she's super tight with Ben. As you said last week, she was super tight with Michelle and Nick, and that was her gang. I mean, obviously she's making these commitments to a lot of people as everybody is, but like where she actually lies, I don't really have a sense. I mean, based on this episode, I would say she's, tight with Ben and Sarah. But based on the last episode, I would have said like Nick and Michelle.
Yeah, we did get to see the Spy Nest pay some dividends eventually tonight. But it's just in regards to Denise, where Denise has a conversation with Sarah and Ben and says, hey, we can't beat Tony. How about this? This is a good final three. Let's try this one.
Yeah, yeah. And it was interesting, too, that... I mean, so tell me why it wasn't Denise. It was just Sarah, you think, put her foot down and was, not Denise? Because the narrative we saw was, Tony went to Sarah. At first, Tony goes to Nick and to Michelle and is like, listen, I'm going to pitch this Ben idea, but, if not, let's definitely do this Denise idea. Then we see him talking to Sarah. They're kind of, they cut away from what they're actually saying. So, the guess is that Sarah was sort of like, no, let's, stick with this gang and eliminate Nick as planned.
Yeah, because I think that if you really think it through, Denise is a great person to be in the final four with us. She's probably not going to flip. Whereas opposed to if you take Denise out now, you have Nick and Michelle, they're a pair. And now let's say somebody comes back from the, let's say Jeremy comes back from the edge of extinction. Now, all of a sudden, now you're heading into a potential 3-3 at the final six. Who knows if they're going to have some sort of an advantage. And I think they probably felt like Denise is a safer bet. If, okay, let's promise Denise final four. She's a good person to go to. Yes, she could win an endurance challenge, but it's probably going to be something that's like a little bit more of a, you know, competition that's, you know, well, in the past, it's been sort of like these, I don't know, that Denise, it tends to be something where it's just like stand in one place and like hold on for dear life. That's Denise's challenge, but that doesn't tend to be what the final four challenge is.
Yeah. I mean, now, well, now it's just fire. But do you think that...
Well, there's a final four immunity challenge.
Right. It's more of like the, like it's more like this.
Like what Ben, yeah. What Ben, you know,
the upside down
you, yeah, or, yeah. You know, some sort of like, or we saw basically, with Nora last season, some sort of like, was it similar to, it's like basically like there's something that could topple over, not dissimilar from the challenge that they did tonight with the dominoes.
I wonder if they, part of the thinking around keeping Ben is he's actually a great shield because there's so much need to get rid of Ben, you know, in the next two votes. Right? Like, I wonder if that's at all their thinking. Like, if we keep Ben around, like, someone is going to feel the obligation to get rid of him because of his skill at fire making in a way that they won't feel that sort of pressure with Tony or Sarah.
So you're saying he's like Jeremy, but without the lovable quality that's where he's going to be a guaranteed win in the end.
Yeah, exactly. Like he's a huge threat, but if he sneaks into the end somehow, you don't really have to worry about it.
Do you think that that was the cause of some of the friction between Jeremy and Ben, is that they were kind of occupying the same slot? They were like blocking each other from being that person?
The meat shield blocking? I was interesting. Like someone sent me an Instagram message with like an idea of like, why is it that like Ben refuses to talk to Jeremy? And it was an interesting idea. It was like the idea that Ben knows he's super persuadable and he also knows how dangerous Jeremy is. So he doesn't want to risk being persuaded by Jeremy. I thought that was an interesting idea.
Yeah. Do you think that
I don't know. I honestly, like, that's another like big mystery. Like why Ben, I get why Ben doesn't want to ally with Jeremy, but like why Ben won't even talk to Jeremy is a mystery to me.
Mm-hmm. Is Jeremy super persuasive when you're on the beach?
Yeah. I found him to be, you know, delightfully persuasive.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Let me see. There's so much to go over and I don't want to get into the edge stuff yet. Nick should have definitely voted for Ben at that tribal council. Is that fair to say?
Wait, for Ben? At the Jeremy.
At the first tribal council.
Yeah. I think so. I mean, it looks like it, right? Because, well, certainly, you know, the fact that he was immediately eliminated. Well, let's play it out where Nick doesn't give Ben a disadvantage at the next one and Michelle gets voted out instead, right? Let's just like say that happens. Ben wins immunity, Michelle gets voted out. So the people left in the game are mystery person coming from the edge, as well as Nick, Tony, Ben, Sarah, and Denise. Yeah, I mean, I guess he's kind of out of luck there, too. It's like, what's his end game there?
Well, if you play out the final six, okay, so let's say that Nick votes for Ben, and then he votes with Jeremy and Michelle. Is there any chance Denise votes with them also and go votes against Tony or Sarah at the final six?
I mean, it's just so hard to say. Like, again, like the whole Denise thing is such a mystery.
Or does Nick then flip back to vote out Jeremy at that point?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's the move, right? Is like at the next tribal council, or you're right, I'm saying this scenario, Jeremy is still in the game. Jeremy's not in the game. He doesn't flip at the Ben tribal council. He just doesn't give the disadvantage to Ben at the following tribal council. So Michelle goes home instead of him. But other than that, it's the same as it exists. So Ben is still in the game, not Jeremy. I wonder if like Yeah, I don't know if his position is much improved than sticking with the Jeremy vote. I think you're right that the correct move for Nick would have been voting out Ben instead of Jeremy.
Yeah, because he could knock out Ben and then knock out Jeremy when he doesn't have the 50-50 advantage. I mean, there was a chance that Jeremy was going to have the advantage played on him there. And, you know,
right, and then
Jeremy,
Michelle goes home, who's Nick's actual ally.
Yeah, but Nick's still in the game.
Well, right. No, I'm sorry, but which tribal council are you talking about?
That if Nick voted for Ben, that would be three votes for Ben, right?
Yeah.
Because Jeremy.
Yeah, yeah. But you were saying there's a chance that Jeremy would be safe, and that would be
if Jeremy won immunity at the finals.
Oh, I see. Six. Yeah. That's not his challenge, I don't think. I don't think that's Jeremy's to win.
Yeah. Yeah, probably not. Yeah. So there's still a chance you can go after Jeremy there, and then. I mean, in that scenario, both Nick and Michelle are there at the final five to await whoever comes back from the final, from the edge of extinction. And then also potentially Denise is a wild card. So, I think that, you know, hindsight being 2020, I feel like that, not sure why Nick didn't take off Ben there in that spot.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, he probably didn't want to go against Tony for part of it, right? Like, he didn't want to go against that majority alliance. I mean, you know, he was saying, like, how do I... He wants to create a situation where he can win in the end. Again, like, I think he must have just not had a set... Like, we're seeing all these confessionals with those three guys saying, like, hey, we're the tight end of Final Three. This is us. Like, it's definitely going to be us. Like, maybe from his perspective, you know... Because we actually haven't seen Nick and Jeremy working together. Like, if you're Nick in that final seven spot,
mm-hmm.
you want to have as many people who want to work with you left in the game. And we do know that Ben and he have a relationship. Right? Because, like, last week we saw Nick say, like, he wanted to play, you know, prove his loyalty to Ben after voting against him. We know that Nick has got a relationship with Tony. So, like...
No, I get it. And I think that Ben was probably... He looked at Ben as, like, one of the people that he could beat. But just in terms of, like, engineering, like, a plan to get to the end. Like, it's not like that Tony and Sarah aren't gonna, like, work with him to vote out Jeremy potentially at the next vote. I mean, it's still, like, another... It's like, you're still in the game, and then also the next vote is also teed up, as opposed to like Michelle, who instantly after the tribal council is like, yeah, all right, well, now what, Nick?
Yeah
It's like, great, you got rid of Jeremy, now we're next.
Yeah, and she was right.
Yeah, she was right. So, you know, very good. You know, I really do enjoy, you know, just frustrated Michelle as a TV character.
Oh, she's great. I loved it. Yeah. And I think, you know, I think people can get so lost in their like infinite convolutions that they like lose sight of that. Like, we have to be able to make it to the end. Like, we need an alliance to make it to the end. You know, people like overthink like, well, if I do this move and then I'm like slightly better positioned here. And like, there's still like, it actually boils down to like quite simple principles. Like, we need our group of three, to be bigger than their group of two, whatever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Michelle goes on to win immunity in the second hour, kind of telegraphed once they started telling us about her back being against the wall. She was going to play her best, that you kind of saw this one coming. For Michelle, it ends up being a challenge that she actually had done in Survivor Co. Wrong, but one that Julia Sokolowski ended up being the person who won immunity. Mm. I remember this from that we did a live know-it-all that night when Debbie got voted out.
Oh, yeah. That was a funny episode for Michelle. I remember Michelle's line was like, I can't believe we're voting out Debbie. I'm like, yeah, it was credible. It was credible that they were voting out Debbie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The advantage that came up now, this was a little confusing for me in terms of what was happening, because that we just saw 2 weeks ago, Stephen, the extortion disadvantage. And so this was like the same thing, except it was what Tony thought he was getting.
it was a challenge.
And I was like waiting for like Nick was reading it. And then I'm like, oh, Nick, you have no idea. Wait till you get to the bottom. It's like, no, you actually get to use this. This is not being played against you.
Yeah, it was the same, but different. Slight. It would have been that you wanted the same. I feel like we saw that. We had that.
Well, I thought that that's what was happening. It was the exact same setup as Tony, except that there was just not the line, and this is being played against.
Yeah, and the immunity was not. The vote at Tribal Council was not up for. Was not in contention.
this was weak sauce for a thing coming back from. I mean, this was the 8 fire token deciding thing. I mean, if Natalie comes back into the game, I mean, this could have been the decider.
Yeah. And this was the final thing. It was like the final, like, yeah, you kind of want it to be something a little more explosive. Like the extortion one would have been like a cool final thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, you know, Nick had to scramble for the 8 fire tokens for this for Nick, it's like, yeah, well, that smoke them if you got them. Like the fire tokens are expiring tomorrow. What am I going to do? Buy more, even more rice, buy a tarp here on day 36. So I get it, but it just was a lot of fire tokens for not a lot of bang for the buck here.
Yeah. Yeah. I completely agree. Not a tremendous amount, but you know, price has gone up. Price of milk's gone up.
Price of milk is going up. Yeah, that. Let's just stop down here for 1 second here, as now the fire token portion of Survivor 40 is over. Like, what did we learn here? You know, it seems like that if there was any hesitation in the early going of, should I spend my 1 fire token on an idol? Yes. Yes, you should. Like, that should. Yeah. No hesitation.
Yeah. Yeah.
Take that deal.
Yeah. Do you think, so obviously, Jeff has promised to you that Edge of Extinction will not be immediately returning. Does that mean fire tokens are also not returning? Or?
Yeah, no, fire tokens will be back. Jeff was very vocal in the preseason. Fire tokens are here to stay.
To stay?
That fire tokens, I think, are going to be a big part of Survivor in the 40s. But I do not think that the fire tokens were a wild success in terms of how they were used in season 40. I don't want to say that they cannot be a really fun part of the show. But in terms of what they delivered in season 40, I feel like the impact is not much.
Yeah, I mean, my biggest complaint about it, I mean, I think there is obviously great upside to fire tokens. We certainly saw it in The Genius, how much a currency can really make a show so fun. My issue is just an airtime issue. You know, it was just like we spent so much time on this and we didn't get to see a lot of the strategy. And I felt like, I still feel like I just don't know what certain people were doing, how certain votes came to pass, like where people's strategic heads were at. And instead, I know in intimate detail their considerations about, you know, how many tokens to spend on this like magic power, you know. And it was I would rather know the strategic stuff or the survival stuff. Honestly, like for me, like I would rather see more survival or more social stuff or more like fun personal stuff.
Yeah, I do think that in future seasons, future players are going to get the chance to see how this all plays out. And I do think that we'll see more stuff of like, hey, could like if you put your vote on this person, I'll give you a fire token. Like, I think that we'll see more trade and barter. And I think that also the other key part of that is that we have to know for the players like a little bit more of like, okay, what they're going to be worth of like, you'll have like this much of an advantage, like at the final 4 immunity challenge, maybe it's like, oh, okay, I know Dalton Ross hates advantages in the challenges, but maybe having the most fire tokens like at the final 4 immunity gives you an advantage in that challenge. Like, they need to also, it can't just be a menu of you can buy stuff with this. It also needs to, there needs to be a reason that I'm collecting these things. And maybe it's like the fire, like 3 fire tokens is a final vote at the final tribal council. So, you know, if I'm coming into the final tribal council with 9 fire tokens, maybe I'm sitting on 3 votes, come up with some way for the fire tokens to have some sort of a conversion to something that is meaningful to me winning the game.
I really appreciate that you just found a way to fundamentally completely destroy the show, like be able to
destroy the show.
You don't think like if people could like essentially buy votes, like literally like the whole premise is like you have to earn the votes, you know, you have to like buy extra votes. I don't know.
You'd still have to get votes from the jury.
Yeah. But like scavenger hunt leads to more votes. I don't know. I mean, I was totally joking.
Oh, I was,
you're ready to fight for this.
I think that's a great idea.
Yeah. I agree with you. I really do agree with you about, you know, there has to be more meaning to them. And I also think you're 100% right that what really hurt the Fire Tokens this season was that these players had like an outsized imagination of what the Fire Tokens were going to mean. You had a few people, you know, I remember Yule at one point saying like, we don't know what these are going to be. They're going to be like, it's possible that this is going to turn into an idol. And maybe Wendell said something similar too. You know, so I think they had this like, no one wanted to like use them or spend them or like wheel and deal with them because they had this like thought that these were going to be like magical tools down the line. And then, right, what it ended up being like part of a bag of rice, you know? So I think you're right that, to have it actually be more powerful and more meaningful in the game, and B, to, you know, for the players to have more of a sense of that scope, I think would lead to a lot more fun.
We heard them during the season, like, you know, I think it was Wendell that was like, we think the fire tokens are going to help you be able to buy an idol later on in the season. No, that isn't what happened. It was that people on the edge of extinction could randomly pick you to assign you a punishment or extort you or, you know, give you something to punish somebody else. It really did not turn out to be that, you know, having the fire tokens. And I mean, Nick said like, hey, I've been sitting on fire tokens the whole game. I have 6 fire tokens here on day 35. Look at me. And then the fire tokens, like, in a very roundabout, indirect way, ended up resulting in Nick being voted out of the game, where he puts a punishment onto, Ben, who, ends up, you know, as you pointed out, Michelle winning the immunity challenge. So the fire tokens did not end up leading to any success for Nick, despite having 6.
Yeah, and exactly. I mean, well, how do they do it in the genius, Rob? Is it like,
so the fire tokens,
their money, right?
Actually, yeah, it's basically like the prize money. So the prize money for the show. I don't think you want to do that. I don't want to think like, okay, this is $1 million in fire tokens, and then distribute that, and then I don't know. I think that there are some things that you could do, like the genius, where somehow allocate where the fire tokens of the player voted out are not bequeathed by the player, but are sort of like, okay, distributed. Here's the bounty of you and you guys.
Oh, for the kill. Oh, that's fun.
So I think that's interesting, yeah. in terms of that, or the person who wins the next immunity challenge wins the fire tokens from the player. So I think you could do some stuff like that with the fire tokens. But I do think that there needs to be some way for the fire tokens that I've collected during the game, that for them to have some value for me, to help me with winning the game when I get to the end of the game.
Here's the reason I didn't love the idea of it affecting jury votes. I feel like I was having trouble articulating this, but I feel like the issue, you know, one of the problems that I think, you know, a lot of fans have felt about Survivor in the last couple of years is that it's making a lot of format changes that bias like one type of player, right? It's like a type of player who's a much more physical player, right? You've got the fire making challenge, you know, where you've got like a lot more advantages, you know, so it's more of a scavenger hunt player. And it has sort of like dialed back the social element of the game, which used to be kind of like the core of how you played Survivor. And I feel like if you removed or if you minimized the jury and made it more like token and advantage centric, then suddenly like that's just like even further skewing that, you know, because the jury has until now been sort of something of an equalizer, you know, where it's like that one person who, you know, the Ben, right, who's amazing at finding idols and things, like can't, you know, well, in fact, Ben did win, but you know, some equivalent scenario.
Yeah. And what I would respond to that is I definitely understand what you're saying. I'm just trying to improve the idea,
right, it's a
of
riff.
Having
we're
fire riffing. Tokens. They're already here. I'm trying to improve them in terms of making them a fair game. And the idea of the fire tokens is also supposed to be social currency. I think that was sort of like, it was like a manifestation of social currency. So it wouldn't be necessarily like, hey, I've found fire tokens like in the bush, or, you know, that I've negotiated and wheeled and dealed. So I'm sitting on a stockpile of fire tokens. They should mean something in terms of helping me win the game.
Yeah, I don't necessarily agree with the final conclusion there, but I do agree that they need some sort of more of a, to be more meaningful in a way, because like no one is, it's like the auction, no one is going to spend it on, you know, a tarp, right? No one's going to buy the tarp.
Right. Okay. Let's talk a little bit about the people on the edge of extinction. A long segment at the end of the episode where we saw everybody getting ready, what they're buying, what they're doing. Any surprises there from the edge of extinction?
No, I mean, the Natalie stuff was hilarious. You know, I mean, we have to talk about that, right? The fact that on the one hand, it's an incredible testament to her ability to endure, speaking of endure and let go of her immediate loss and endure this grueling experience to really master the edge of extinction. I think Tyson had a very funny quote about how she's like, you don't know where like Natalie ends and the island begins. And, you know, really, we really saw her work for every one of these fire tokens that's now given her like limitless superpowers, like multiple advantages in the challenge, an idol, another idol for Tyson, and a jar of peanut butter. But the fact is, like, a lot of the reason that she was able to acquire all this stuff was that she was first voted out. And someone like Nick, who was just voted out, doesn't have a shot. Like, he can't get all that cool stuff for the challenge because he really did well in the game of Survivor.
Yeah.
Where do you come down on this, Rob?
No, I definitely understand the point. And this was like really well laid out by people like Dalton Ross at the point where, you know, the first person came back from the edge of extinction. But I think it's a little bit insulting to say that, oh, it's just not fair. Natalie has 14 fire tokens because she has been there since day three. But Amber, who got there the day after, has none. And Danny Boatwright, I'm not sure if she has any. And Ethan does not have any fire tokens. So it's not just that, like, oh, well, Natalie had the most time to collect the fire tokens. She also like really busted her butt there. So while yes, that she had the opportunity to succeed because of the time she was there, as opposed to Nick, who just gets there and has almost no chance in the challenge to get back in. I don't want to discredit Natalie either.
And we saw her busting her butt, right? We saw her. Yeah. I mean, you know, there's two types of challenge. One where like her knowledge of the island was an enormous benefit, right? The challenge tonight where she like knew exactly what was being talked about. You know, did Kim know which throne was being talked about? No. And like Wendell knew it was like one of two places and he chose the wrong one. And so in that way, I do feel like she had kind of an edge because of having been there for so long. But then you saw her also like kill it in the coconut gathering challenge or the wood retrieving thing. So it did seem like it was a combination of just the knowledge she had and the effort she put in. And I agree, like, you don't want to take away from her and her incredible effort. You know, nothing is fair, right? Like, Survivor's not fair.
You know, as they say, the edge of extinction is almost like the ultimate CrossFit box.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah. Some people with funky socks.
Yeah. So Natalie, interestingly, I want to get your reaction to this. She bought an idol for Tyson, which I was surprised by that. We never really saw any sort of relationship between Natalie and Tyson on the edge. Also, Jeremy is there. You would think that if anything, Natalie would buy something for Jeremy if he got back into the game. Where did that come from?
Maybe like Tyson is amazing and hilarious and like maybe they bonded like because they did spend a ton of time there together. So like, you know, people who meet Tyson love Tyson. And, you know, it's not crazy to me that like they as both like funny endurance athletes would have like some bond both in their like senses of humor and in their, you know, extreme physical prowess. But B, you know, maybe she feels like Tyson is the likeliest person to get back into the game. You know, Tyson got back in previously. Maybe she wants like it to be someone from the edge and for her to kind of, you know, have some part in that. You know, I feel like I honestly like looking at that challenge would not wager on Jeremy. You know, like he's not like an epic challenge beast. Like, and if you look at the people who are there, like I would put my money on Natalie or Tyson, to be honest. So, I mean, you know.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting. We never saw the end of Tyson's peanut butter. Is it possible? Do you think that he left his original jar of peanut butter to Natalie? Do you think this is some sort of like peanut butter payback? Also, she was eating peanut butter. She was feeding some to Tyson. Do you think that this is a bond over the peanut butter?
I mean, maybe the like their shared love of peanut butter, because it looked like Natalie started with a pretty full jar. And I'm guessing that Tyson did not leave a very full jar of peanut butter.
Mm-hmm. But he bought it and then went back into the game a couple days after.
You think it's the same jar but refilled with peanut butter?
No. I think that when he went back into the game, I wonder if he left gave a heads up to Natalie about where she could find it.
Yeah, it could be.
So I don't know. Seems like she owed him one.
Yeah.
Just trying to figure out how.
I just think it was probably a bond and she thought he had the best shot.
Okay. All right.
You know, maybe there was a little bit of a quid pro quo, hey, this is $100,000 of immunity idol.
Maybe. Yeah. And then we ended up having the very long montage to end the show tonight of the recap. I just think that this was something that they put together where it was, I don't know how they're going to stack the finale, but this was seems like the kind of thing that would have opened next week's show that they ended up tacking on here.
Yeah, I was happy with that. The finale is always so rushed. Right. Yeah. Let's just have it here. And then next week we can get into the fun stuff.
Yeah. Are you looking forward to the Zoom finale?
Yeah, I am. It'll be as historic as the Rosie finale. So, it's such a change in format from the typical Survivor finale.
Yeah, it should be pretty wild. I am looking forward to, I'm sure with Mike Bloom, we'll get into this weekend, things we can expect or not expect in the Zoom finale. All right. We're going to get into taking your questions here in just a moment. But let me thank our sponsor for this episode of the podcast. Steven, I want to thank our friends over at Brook Linen. Steven, I suspect that you take betting very seriously.
Well, anyone who's been on Survivor is an becomes obsessive about their betting. Once you've slept on Bamboo, you really want to sleep on the best.
Yes. And that's why I'm not sure over at the Edge of Extinction, if they are not getting their sheets from the Brook Linen, maybe it's time to raise the sail, because bringing comfort into your home is the ultimate form of self-care. And now more than ever, it's important to take care of yourself and each other. You spend a third of your life in sheets. Why don't you want to be insanely comfortable? Brook Linen helps you find comfort in the little things, morning routines, extra soft sheets, plush towels, etc. That if you're working from home, staying comfortable is the best way to be productive. Brook Linen is there for every part of the daily routine. A good night's sleep is priceless and increasingly harder to come by.
True.
Brook Linen has helped build the perfect bedroom oasis. That's my perfect place to escape. I love my Brook Linen sheets. I throw a fit if we ever do the laundry and we don't get the Brook Linen sheets back ASAP.
What happens to them?
My go-to. We had one set, and then I said, I can't have this when we don't have the Brook Linen. So for Christmas, Nicole got me more Brook Linen sheets.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
You are a man who's committed to his sheets.
I am. Ask the First Lady of Podcasting. So I swear by the Brook Linen sheets. If you like softness, comfort, essentials to help you relax, Brook Linen has it all. Brooklinen.com is the perfect place to find all the comforts from home. They're so confident in their products that all their sheets, comforters, loungewear, and towels come with a lifetime warranty. Their Memorial Day event kicks off this weekend, so you don't want to miss. Ease your way into summer with big savings on sheets, bedding, towels, loungewear, and their newest hammam and linen collection. And if you can't wait, get 10% off your first order and free shipping on all the new sheets right now when you use promo code Rob at brooklinen.com. That's brooklinen.com. Brook Linen, everything you need to live your most comfortable life. No sleep till Brook Linen.
Okay. Was that in the copy or was that a riff?
I write that for them.
That's great. You the whole thing? Okay.
Yeah, well, no, just no sleep till Brooklyn.
That's fantastic. That was great. Yeah. I love that.
I told them they can use that, but they haven't taken it on yet. Okay. All right. Steven, let's hear, what does Sheldon have to say?
All right, Sheldon wants to know, I don't understand why Natalie didn't just buy more idols for herself and completely control the game by forcing an advantage Geddon. Also, shouldn't she want two idols, not just for F6, F5, but also in case another nullifier's in the game? Sheldon,
she can only have one, Sheldon.
Is that right? Was there a limit on the idols she could buy? Then why could she buy it for Tyson?
She can only bring one idol into the game. That's what they said.
Did they say that? Okay.
That was the reason. I think she would have bought all idols and then and just gone to Final Four. But they said, I guess in the rules, she was only allowed, that nobody thought of that, of like, what if somebody has so many fire tokens that they buy all the idols and then they just go right to the end of the game? Unfortunately, she was not allowed to do that.
Yeah.
So, you know, and I guess we should say, Natalie Anderson, you know, pencil her in for the final five. If she's in,
I mean, that would be, I mean, you know, maybe she'll try to take the gamble, right? Didn't Chris took a gamble, right? One of his votes and did not use his idol right away. Am I right about that?
Yeah.
The final six vote?
That I don't know if I said at the top of the show, I'm going to talk to PG Law tomorrow, Chris Underwood on Friday to hear what
he's the guy to talk to.
Yeah. He's the guy to talk to. And then Mike Bloom this weekend. So we'll find out. But yeah, Natalie Anderson, if she makes it back in, or Tyson, go directly to the final five.
Yeah. I really do wonder if someone returning from the edge can win this game after the huge backlash. I mean, it's like I guess we didn't think someone from the edge could win at all. And
I think
they
can. I think they can.
You think yes?
I think they can. Either way, I think that it would be disappointing because Tony and, Sarah, they've played, you know, really great games. But if they're up against the right people, I certainly think that they would have the momentum. I think that what would be frustrating is, let's say it's like Tony, Sarah, and somebody from the edge, and the person from the edge, and say it's Natalie, Tony, Sarah, Natalie. Okay, we've dominated. It's not like, okay, right, Gavin and Julie, with all due respect, you know, these are two people that really dominated the game, especially the post-merge game, against somebody who was not on the show the entire time except on the Edge of Extinction. And the jury says, we vote for you, Edge of Extinction person, because you were our friend. I think at some point the Edge of Extinction result was like a little bit like that the people on the jury said, yes, well, we bonded with Chris, but he balled out when he got into the game. He made the big move. Whereas, you know, especially like if, you know, Natalie comes back and ultimately plays an idol, wins two challenges, gets to the end, and then collects all of the votes, and they wins the game because that they just couldn't beat her in a challenge.
Yeah, I mean, I also think that there's a good, you know, that these players, and especially, you know, because they're returning players and also because of just who they are, like, I think, A, like, maybe the backlash to 38 would really weigh heavy on them, and B, you know, I remember in Cambodia, Jeremy was such a huge proponent of, like, having, like, a big player win, you know, because they felt like they owed it to the franchise, you know, for like a real big player to win the game. And I bet that there is some of that feeling here, that like they really want, and maybe that is a person who comes back from the edge if they have that stellar end. But my guess would be that they would be maybe biased against that more even than the new players were.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We'll see. We'll see how it factors in. Okay. All right. Let's take another question. This is from Faison, who says, how much of a role would pre-Winners at War winning game legacies have, if any, versus performance this season alone at the final tribal? I think that would come up if it was like, okay, say Tony perhaps like played like a really under the radar game, didn't do anything this game, where it's just like, she sort of like the Tony we saw in the pre-merge basically skated by until the end. I think then that would be a valid question. I mean, whose reputation in coming into this game is radically different from what they've done in this game?
Although I do think like people, you know, like Michelle has had this feeling of like, no one, you know, values my win. Like, maybe they still don't value that win. You know, she's played as good a game, maybe not as Tony and Sarah, but like, she's certainly, I mean, she's been on the wrong side of a lot of votes, but she's played a big game. She's had a decisive role in a lot of parts of the season, you know, and, you know, she managed to escape, right, that when she was swap screwed. And I can imagine someone still kind of like seeing her with that, like, oh, I don't really think of you as that strategic, you know, like, I can imagine that kind of bias seeping into people's perceptions of someone like Michelle.
I don't know. I feel like that, you know, people who, you know, discredit her victory in Ko Rong are wrong to do that. But I feel like that if you look at Ko Rong through the proper lens, I don't think that this game that she's playing this season is super different from the winning strategy she used in Ko Rong.
Yeah. I mean, look, I just think that, you know, people's perceptions of each other are always going to play a role in like every aspect of their relationships. And I don't think that anyone will like fully be able to like leave that behind.
Yeah. I think the people that we were talking about in this regards were really like Tony before he came out of his shell, Kim throughout most of this game, where she played a much different game than she was able to play in her winning season in Survivor One World. And Jeremy really was playing from the bottom throughout most of this game, as opposed to where he was in Cambodia, although at the bottom at times, really was like playing from behind most of the season. So his game was going to be kind of different. But I don't think there's anybody who is in like a radically different spot.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess that's right. You know, I do think, though, that like, you know, to the question, like, you know, how much of their positions are based on their perceptions? Like, so much of the season was based on this sort of, you know, lions versus hyenas dichotomy. And that was entirely right based on people's like pre-game perceptions. You know, it wasn't like, sure. So I think, you know, I do think those perceptions have seeped into this game in a really essential way.
Okay. All right. Let's take another question. What does Brendan Fitzpatrick have to say?
Oh, the great Brendan Fitzpatrick wants to know, how do you compare Tony at the final five or six now with the Tony at the final 5/6 in Cagayan? Is it now a warning sign that we think he could win this now as opposed to how we felt around here in Cagayan? What do you think, Rob?
So Tony at the final five I'm trying to think of, let's just stick with the final five. That's when he votes out Trish to put her on the jury, right, to ultimately be a vote for him. I mean, I feel like that with Tony, like, I think that we felt like that Tony had a good shot to get to the end. I'm not sure if we knew if it was going to be a final two at that point. I think we might have suspected. But with the final five being Tony, Wu, Trish, Spencer, and Cass, I have to think we probably felt like that Tony had a pretty good shot to get to the end. Just probably didn't think that he was going to win.
Yeah. And how do you feel now? Do you feel equivalently?
I mean, I feel like that with it being a final three, I do feel like that Tony's got to be way on the odds on favorite to win this thing, where I think that a lot of us thought that Spencer was probably the favorite going into the Cagayan finale.
Yeah. So does that mean because Tony's the favorite now and Spencer was the favorite then, that Tony won't win?
It's possible.
Yeah.
But that was like really a big blindside in terms of like, well, one of the few times that we've been so wrong on a season.
Oh yeah, even at the final tribal, I thought there was like a chance that Wu was gonna win. I was like writing my blog and I was like texting people from the season hoping that they would give me an answer because I had to like get the blog out.
yeah it was a wild night. Okay. All right. Lydia wants to know, when did Survivor start having arts and crafts segment? Was there always this much painting?
There's so much painting. And they also were painting their like mugs. Like that can't be safe. Yeah. I thought those were like mugs or something. But like, I was like, are they drinking out of those after they paint them? That's not like BPA free.
No, I don't think so. I don't think that's safe. Yeah. Do not drink out of the mug that you're painting. It's more arts and crafts that are going on at my house.
Yeah.
Just seems seemingly constant. Okay. What about Laura?
All right. Laura Kastler wants to know, hey, Rob and Steven, do you think Sarah and Tony have a pact to split the $2 million if they both make it to final three? It seems like they're both risking a lot for each other's games.
I do not believe they have a pact. First of all, I believe that that is not allowed, if not at least strongly frowned upon. But Steven, in this day and age, like, are they really checking?
Yeah, like, exactly. Like they're looking like, into your auditing yeah. you.
Like, I mean, do you think that anybody's like if, you know, if Tommy and DK Chillin were like, hey, let's get to the end together, let's split the money. Is anybody auditing those guys?
Maybe they hired Jane Bright to be the auditor for all deals.
I feel like that they used to like really look into that stuff. I bet you could get away with it now. I'm just saying.
Well, yeah, I doubt. I mean, but like, who's gonna, you know? Also, like, who's gonna hold you responsible? You know, if one of them wins, like, it, you know, they can't force the other person to give them $2 million bucks.
SCG thing, like, who's
I'm just saying, like, I'm saying though, like, even if you agree to it, you know, you can pull a Dreams here. Like, you do not have to honor that deal.
Yeah. So I don't know. That's something people can try in a future season.
Okay. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, do you, you know, if it is Tony versus Sarah, who's taking home the million, Rob?
I mean, I think that is probably, I think it's probably Tony, but it's hard to separate the edit from the case. You know, I made the argument, you know, I think that Sarah has the stronger social connections with people, but you know, we also see things like Boston Rob saying like, oh, Tony's such a boss. I feel like that the jury seems very convinced that Tony is the guy to beat.
Yeah, is the winner of this season the great? Are they officially the best?
I think we'd have to wait until next week, but I think that those are going to be some I don't know if you want me to waste all my podcasting jet fuel right now. I think there's a strong case that they are. I mean, hypothetically, let's just talk this through. Okay, so if Tony goes on to be the 2-time winner. This is very impressive. That is a legacy that is very hard to argue with.
Tony's game this season has been spectacular. Like, regardless of what happens, the fact that he has won all of these immunities, yes, but run like basically strategic circles. He has controlled every single vote. I mean, it seemed like today he deferred to Sarah. Sarah's also played an amazing game. The two of them together have just, you know, all these people who have won the game previously.
And you know what? And honestly, I think that that's actually a good point in terms of the strength of Tony, where I think that if Tony does go on to win this game, I think that that will be sort of like the knee jerk reaction. Tony, greatest of all time. I do think that Tony did have a big advantage in this season in being with Sarah. And I think that you can speak to this probably as well as anybody, but having somebody that has your back the entire game, which you can trust, is the ultimate advantage. And we've seen so much success on Survivor from the players that find that one person that they can trust fully. And Tony did screw her over with Sophie vote, no doubt, but they were able to work past that. And to have that bond with somebody where to even be able to joke about, I should screw you now. I do think that having Sarah was, for the two of them was, a huge, huge advantage. And for the other players to be worried about Jeremy and Natalie and Rob and Amber and Tyson and Rob and all these other connections and not be at all concerned about Tony and Sarah is incredulous.
Well, does that make it actually? So that is interesting, right? And that does go into like pregame perceptions and personae. Like, does that make it less like you are because like Rob, it's like, yes, whoever wins this season outlasted Boston Rob, but Boston Rob never had a chance in this season. You know, do they become like, you know, like you're saying, like no one was gunning for Tony and Sarah in the way that they were gunning for Tyson and Kim, like, you know, those pregame. And I, you know, I'm not trying to take away anything from the incredible game Tony and Sarah playing, because I really think I just think on the merits of their game that it is probably one of the best games we've ever seen. But, you know, the fact of having, you know, a little bit of all of the Tony certainly came, like, Tony was the only person, I've said this before, in this like survivor pool that like nobody took. And so there's like 30 or 40 people in this pool.
I think there was
no
a draft
one took Tony.
I'm pretty sure that it was Akiva, Ali Lasher, and Liana, Mike Bloom. I'm pretty sure he went 20th out of 20. So that either the perception of Tony was so low following Game Changers, where nobody took him seriously, like that they expected, okay, is this going to be just the clown show coming back tonight or coming back this season where we don't take him seriously? He also did an incredible job of minimizing his threat level. And we have to find out from the people that were on that original Dekal tribe how much. And we heard Sophie talk about, okay, well, Tony and Sarah and Sandra are sort of like the gritty three, the people that were on Game Changers together. They were looked at like a block to start the season, but why weren't they considered a little bit more of a threat to from the jump?
I agree. It's so weird. Well, you know, I experienced something like this where I was on, obviously, Cambodia with a lot of people from Cagayan. And, you know, out of the gate, we were all like, oh, my God, there's four people from Cagayan. We have to get rid of them. Like, they're obviously going to be in it together. And then as the game goes on, you kind of like forget about it. You're like, oh, that's old news. Like, we're in this, like, we're in the self-enclosed thing. Like, mm-hmm. the relationships and dynamics that are happening here are much more important. Like, you're not going to like let some friendship you had from 4 years ago affect your, you know, your game moves now. And then at the end, like, suddenly the curtain was pulled back and like, yes, like Spencer and Tasha were collaborating the whole time. Like, of course, like how stupid of us to miss that. How stupid of me to miss that. And it's like one of my biggest regrets from that season was like so stupid of me. So, but I do think that probably is affecting the players now. You just get like, you're so focused on the game that's in front of you. You're so focused on the relationships that you're building that you even if you go into the season knowing that it's a real threat, you just lose sight of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And look, and we saw people like even in the middle of the game, Jeremy a couple of weeks ago says to Tony, like, hey, we need to split up Sarah and Sophie.
Yeah, right. Exactly. And then Sarah, and then that was what prompted Tony to be like, oh, heck no. Hey, here's a question for you, Rob. Last week, the plan was to get Tony and then Tony won immunity. Why was the plan not to get Tony this week?
Especially when he had an idol, that especially at that first tribal council when, you know, for Jeremy and Michelle, they could have potentially put their votes on Tony. Hey, instead of blindsiding Ben, who has an idol, like, Nick, why don't we vote on Tony this week?
Even Ben was in on the plan last week, although Ben obviously was the one who sort of blabbed about it afterwards.
Yeah. And it's like, OK, well, Nick, you're so worried about, OK, oh, how am I going to beat Jeremy? How are you going to beat Tony? You had a shot at Tony.
Yeah. I mean, I do think that Tony was definitely helped by having he kept Jeremy in the game. And I think that has been a huge strategic a great move of his because it's so much energy. It's been focused on Jeremy for like weeks on end.
Yeah. Okay. Let's take a few more questions here tonight. How about this one? This is from Frank. After three immunity wins and not winning these last two, how come no one left in the game has considered going after Tony? Steven, you're reading Frank's mind. Also, he has not had... Okay, so what about at the final six? Why not any talk about voting out Tony in that spot?
That's what I'm wondering. Frank, you and I are so in sync on this.
Yeah. So we talked about the final the final seven vote. At the final six, what does that look like to take out to vote for Tony?
So that would be Michelle and Denise.
Make him play his idol.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, like you said, you know, we saw Denise make a tight final three deal with Nick and Michelle last week. And then this week she was voting Nick out. So who knows?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, it's tough. I'm trying to think of, what the what it would have looked like if you're Nick and Michelle, and I'm sure that, you know, that we don't get to see all the conversations, but for Ben and Denise, like, why not go with Nick and Michelle here at the, let's vote out Sarah. Let's vote out Tony.
Yeah. Yeah,
why not?
I agree.
They both have better resumes than Denise and Ben.
Maybe Ben thinks, what is Ben's perspective here? Like, that he can beat, maybe Ben is like, I just need to get to the final three. Like, I'm not going to win this anyway. Maybe he's like doing the Troyzan where he's like, just happy to be here.
Yeah, and maybe Sarah and Tony talk it through with them. It's like, hey, sure, you can vote one of us out now, but then, you know, somebody's going to come back from the edge. They're going to go with Nick and Michelle. You're going to be in we'll be having to go to a 3-3 tie at the final six. Maybe, but, you know, at some point, you know, you got to knock some of these people out.
Yeah, I don't know. It's a tough one.
Okay. All right. A couple more questions here tonight. Damn it, Reed. Does Denise being the only one left without a categorical type thrust upon her from the last time help her? She's not labeled beauty, brawn, hero, or David. She's just Denise. Is that the problem, Stephen? She didn't have a categorical label from her first season.
It probably helps her. You know, I mean, it's like it is like. You know, what box do you put Denise in? I feel like everyone is on the one hand, they're being like, yeah, Denise did all these crazy, huge things. And they're also kind of like not the completely discounting
season
Denise
41,
at the same time.
Survivor, endure versus let go. These 10 people.
I got to tell you.
Embodiment of the word endure. These people are the embodiment of the love, the phrase, let's go.
No, let go.
Let go.
Do you want to be on the endure or the let go tribe?
I think I'm more of an endure than a let go.
But who do you want to be with? Like, if you're with the endurers, like, they're all enduring. Like, you want to be with, like, everyone who's letting it go, and then you can be the one who endures.
I'm a podcaster. Every day of my life, I endure the slings and arrows of podcasting about a 20-year-old reality show. I am the personification of the word endure.
Wow. I got chills. I can see the montage.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like, I'm Stephen Fishback. I'm out of the corporate rat race. I'm the embodiment of let go.
I did let go.
Yeah.
That's been great. Would you, if you go back, are you going to do like a rock microphone, you know, like Shane and his like rock Blackberry?
It'll be so hated.
Either way, you're going to be hated.
If I don't do that, I'll be hated.
Yeah, either way. Yeah.
By the other people or the people?
They're envious.
I definitely think the other contestants would hate me, but the people at home are going to hate me also.
No, you're going to be loved. You're like everyone's most beloved. You know, you were just ranked the most influential survivor person by the Purple Rock podcast.
I thought they said that was 40 people that was a ranking.
Well, I assumed you were number one. I just assumed you were number the first.
I think it was from what I was able to follow. I think it was an unranked, which is unarbitrary and unreductive collection of 40. Correct me if I'm wrong.
Rob. Okay. What a character.
Yeah. All right. D. Patrick Lopez. Looking forward to hearing Matt Hoffman talk about the last 10 minutes of the episode. Look, that we shouldn't complain. We shouldn't complain that
I was happy.
Yeah. Get it out of the way.
More finale for next week. You know, everyone complains about how rushed the finale is. And then when they, you know, put the finale stuff at this week, you know, now you're complaining. Yeah, people complain. I guess me, I'm foremost among them, but you know.
Yeah. No, I made a joke on Twitter about it, but we shouldn't complain. This easily could have been two tribal councils in 1 hour, and we got 2 hours out of this. And so they put some filler in there. It's fine. This was
Do you think Yule was specifically cast in order to give that stirring endorsement of the fire tokens?
So that in the trailer for the season, he says the line, which there's 10 million Reddit posts of Yule saying fire tokens will add a new layer of duplicity to the season. You know, God forbid there's a Reddit thread about an episode of this show, but we had 10,000 Reddit threads for that one line. And then we get Yule talking about the fire tokens, and then he doesn't even say duplicity.
Oh, really? That's funny. So duplicity was edited. That's so funny. I did not catch that. So that was edited in?
It was a line. He said complexity aired in the show.
He said complexity, though. He definitely said it added more complexity,
but the duplicity is the meme.
Wow. That's wild. So did he get dubbed over? Is it in the pregame?
I think they took something on the cutting room floor and put it in the trailer.
That's really funny.
Did he say it?
Do you think he had to do a number of versions of the take where they're
He said duplicity. Duplicity was at his tribal and they just dubbed it over what he said.
Maybe he did maybe he did 10 versions. What else? Okay. Yeah. As a new layer of sincerity to the game.
But did it?
No.
If it did, not to this season.
In fact, it was the opposite of the duplicity, because people were collaborating by sharing fire tokens. There was no duplicity about the fire. Everyone knew who had fire tokens. There was no mystery over who had how many fire tokens.
And if there was complexity, that buying advantages for the return challenge was not it.
Yeah.
this was very straightforward.
It was very straightforward. It was not a new level of complexity, but maybe it will.
Okay.
Maybe it will.
All right. Dominic says, did Denise channel her inner Zane Knight with the ice strategy? Did it pay off? Yeah. What was she saying?
I didn't even think about that. It wasn't just the tattoos.
Yeah.
It was also
I'm
going to quit.
Zane Knight. This was all about Zane Knight. Malcolm had a great Zane Knight story when I talked to him about how I asked Malcolm if he could tell me anything of any fun Zane Knight stories. And he said that basically when Zane was running around the island, that Malcolm was like trying to like get a read from him. And Zane Knight like said to him, like, would a man with this tattoo, like pointing to Frankenstein, lie to you? And Malcolm was like, I really don't know. I'm like, what is the...
Amazing.
Love Zane Knight. Okay. We should have Zane Knight on to recap an episode. Okay.
That would be great.
It'd be great. I love him. Okay.
Finale.
All right. There we go. Steven, so much going on Rob as a podcast, Purple Pants podcast. The talk of the town is that Bryce Isaiah might be making an appearance on the mothership this week. Be on the lookout for that. Purple Pants podcast from this past episode, Alexis Maxwell joined Bryce. I'm like halfway through it. Check out the latest Purple Pants podcast, plus the Survivor Power Rankings with Matt Ligori talking with Gavin. Gavin and Victoria. Oh, Kemi is going to be on Taryn's Survivor Update on Thursday. So check that out. And then PG Law will be my guest. I think we're going to do that one on video. Check in with PG. Excited. Speaking of second chances, one of your castmates. PG Law.
She's great.
Chris Underwood is going to join me.
The PG curse is definitely going to be broken.
Yes. So there you go. Yeah. Chris Underwood, I'll talk to him on Friday, and then we'll preview what's going on with the Edge of Extinction Challenge. AK Knight is going to join Shannon Gus on Survivor Global this week, so be on the lookout for that. Then Mike Bloom is going to be my guest on the Feedback Show, a Rob is a Podcast tradition, where we will talk with Mike Bloom on the final Feedback Show before the end of the season is back this time around for season 40. And then check this out, Jenny Autumn and Puya Zanvakili on the B&B this week. Back with Liana Boris. It's going to be a RHAP sequester reunion for those three. And then find out why Jeremy lost and why Nick lost, a double YX lost, with David Bloomberg and Jessica Lewis this weekend as well. Akiva Whitaker, what, your friend and mine, Stephen, he will join us on This Week in Survivor. He actually lost a bet earlier in the season. I don't remember what we were betting on, but the loss of the bet means he had to come on This Week in Survivor.
And what would have happened if you had lost?
I forget what I had to do, but that was what he had to do. Come on and take the Jordan Kalish quiz. And then we will have one final wiggle room after this double episode before we get into next week's final wand off after the finale. So
final.
We'll see. We'll see. Things change. But that was the original plan, a final wand off. OK. All right. And then, of course, look, we've been doing it for 5 weeks. Let's keep it going for one more week, okay? Through the finale, you want to check out becoming a patron of Rob as a Podcast, we will donate your new patron contributions, and then I will match it through the finale of Survivor Winners at War. Let's see where this goes. robiswebsite.com/patron, doing all so much stuff with the patrons right now. Monday night trivia. Steven, you know, I do a 2.5 hour Survivor pregame show before we even get to the know-it-alls on a Wednesday.
That's crazy. No wonder you're like deep in it. Like, I feel like whenever we talk.
I'm too far.
But you know everything. And I'm like, wait who's, what happened? Yeah.
No, I might be burnt out by the time we get to the know-it-alls. That might be the issue.
Well, Rob, I want to apologize to you because yes. No, I do. Because I thought we were bantering. You know, you said there are no stupid questions, and I said no stupid questions, but a stupid co-host. And I thought, you know, I came in with a headache, and I was like, I thought we were bantering, and I was trying to keep it going, but I felt like it hurt your feelings. It was not intentional.
No, I go on Twitter that I can't, my feelings can't be hurt.
No, Steven. But this is, you know, we do this very, we tell this very delicate line where we like hassle each other and banter, but you know, it's it can get, you know, if someone's feelings get hurt, you know, it was totally unintentional, and I really want to apologize.
No, I'm fine. I thought you were coming in a little hot. I look to you to explain some of these things that you come in and you have a real understanding. I have to watch these shows multiple times to be able to figure out what's going on. So hopefully you can have a little more patience with me in the future.
Oh, no, but I defer to your expertise. I think, like, you know, I feel like you know things much better than I do.
Maybe I think that you pick things up quicker, but maybe forget them sooner. Whereas I'm slower on the uptake, but then they stay with me.
Yeah.
And I have to talk about them all week long.
I'm like a sieve. It like flows through me.
you get it quicker, but then lose it quicker. And
yeah, you're
it
like
takes,
a,
me,
yeah,
takes
yeah.
me more of a, like a, maybe two viewings before I have it all down. Okay.
Yeah. Well, it's so much fun. And one of the real pleasures of this season has been hashing it out with you. People text me all the time. I have no idea what's going on with the season strategy. I have no idea where that vote was. And I feel like there have been many episodes this season where I have like had zero clue what happened. And then just talking it through with you have been able to, oh, okay, that makes sense. It's really kind of added clarity. Mm-hmm. So I feel like one great thing about this podcast, is that where I feel like we figure it out together. We work through it together.
Unpack right after the episode. Okay. Steven, today it was announced that Survivor was renewed for season 41.
They got to film it to air it though. Yeah. I mean, we'll see. I'm delighted. I'm very happy. Like, there's no question that like Survivor's got the time slot if they can film a show, right?
If they can film a show, do you have any thoughts on that in terms of like Josh Wigler and I were talking about the possibilities of, and this was just rampant speculation, not that we heard anything of the potentially could Survivor film a season in the continental United States? Do you think we know, like, in terms of like talking about like bringing sports back, okay, well, we know what the perfect situation to get back to normal is going to be, and it doesn't look like we're going to be able to do that. Do you think there's any sort of like compromise that could be had in terms of like, hey, could we get out on a ranch somewhere and film a Survivor season to get ready for the show being on sometime later in 2020?
I mean, I do think that would be a real buzzkill for a lot of people, but maybe not so much of a buzzkill as,
the buzzkill would be not having a season.
Yeah, well, that's what I was going to say. Like, more, like, that would be, it would be better to have some season. I actually have been thinking about this a lot because, they don't jump around locations anymore, like they used to. So it's not like it has to be on, it's not like they're going to like new, remote, fascinating places anymore. Yeah. They're basically on the same beaches every single season. The other thing is, like, there are elements of, like Survivor's like mythos that are becoming like slightly outdated. Like when they go and visit the villages and like the children, those are always like deeply moving moments, but there's a little bit of like an exoticism about them. That's like, I feel like it's not going to age very well in the near future. Hmm. Like, it's like awesome. It's always like an incredibly like moving, heartwarming moment, but I wonder like how well that will continue to happen. And it hasn't happened in a while, right? Yeah. Like when was the last time they visited a village? So like, I do wonder, if that, how much it would really lose from doing it like Survivor Hawaii.
Yeah. Well, I don't even know about Hawaii in terms of like, I feel like that, like the, it might be tricky to get people, to Hawaii. But what about, hear me out here. What about some sort of like Survivor Old West? Okay. Some sort of a film somewhere in the Southwest.
With robots?
Like a Westworld-esque like motif. What do you think? You could imagine like instead of like building like a shelter, but you have like kind of like a tent, Survivor in the Old West.
I mean, listen, Tocantins, Brazil was like very much that environment. It was like a dust heap. So, by a river,
I think that you could really like much like a Pearl Islands. I think creatively, I think it would really like open the doors to like a lot of like frontier type like survival elements and sort of like the idea of sort of like pioneers, like cowboy type theme. You don't like this? You think this is crazy?
I don't know. I mean, I actually, it could be really cool. Like, yeah, like the Pearl Islands was really cool with like the pirate stuff. Like, it could be so corny though. You know, it's just like, you know, like, I mean, there's such a high risk there of
what
corniness.
What is the risk? Is it a crazier theme than Ghost Island or Heroes versus Healers versus Hustlers? If you like, if Survivor is like, hey, we really want to get a season on the air for later this year, you know, could they film something like this?
I would watch.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, just a podcast about it, really. Yeah.
Even if it was, you know, 21 days, you know, is there a version of Survivor like that does not have to be the perfect, pristine 39 days in Fiji that we've come to expect?
Now let me counter with another idea where, you know, you and I have been somewhere very bleak together, hard to navigate, you know, wide open expanses. What about Survivor, the CBS lot? You know, that could be an interesting, you know, or like in the you know, in the parking lot, big, you know, open spaces, dodging cars just becomes part of it.
I think
they
already have that show, and it's called Big Brother, which is literally filmed on the CBS lot. So. I do think that Big Brother is going to be, there's been no talk about when Big Brother could come back, but I do think that, you know, maybe Survivor is thinking outside the box about some of these things.
Big Brother has got to be the safest place to be, like a house where no one comes or goes.
With Big Brother, it's the production. It's, you know, how do you keep the crew members safe? Like in terms of like, it's close quarters and there's a lot of like people like working on like in the art department and stuff like that. So once you could figure out how to keep those people protected, that's why the Big Brother Canada ended up getting shut down. It wasn't the people in the house. It was the people who worked on the production. Hmm. Okay. All right. Steven, people ask for a fishy.
Oh, yeah. Tonight. Tony? No, who else? Michelle, maybe, but she didn't like. She won immunity. She wasn't really able to get her way strategically.
It's hard to give Tony the fishy for the second hour.
Yeah, but for the first, okay, I agree. Just two episodes. First hour, definitely, it was Tony, right? It was his move. I mean, I guess Denise? For the second hour, it would be. I mean, Denise, for her like play acting, it didn't really change very much, did it? Like, did that have an impact? Like, that's what I didn't get. Like, what was the?
I mean, maybe
the effect
she, like, of she the maybe setting up a deal for the final three. She didn't get voted out,
right? So she's playing dead as a way of minimizing the target on her because no one's going to vote out the person playing dead. Yeah, I could see Denise. I mean, I also think Sarah would be a good. You know, we didn't actually see that conversation between Tony and Sarah, but it really did seem like Sarah was the decisive voice in Nick getting voted out. But I would be good with Denise. I mean, I think Denise is a good one.
Okay. All right. Steven, 1 week from tonight, we will be live at 11:15 p.m. Eastern. Aren't you glad you live on the West Coast? 8:15 p.m. Pacific to break down 3 hours of Survivor, the Zoom finale, and much more. So be on the lookout for that next Wednesday night. And of course, follow Steven Fishback on Twitter. Anything else, Steven?
No. It has. I start again. I also want to apologize for this. I started the episode very down on this. I thought calling it the greatest ever was a little bit much. You know, like let us, the fans, make
be the greatest
that,
ever.
Yeah. But I think it's probably bottom half of the top 10. I mean, largely just because who it is, right? It's like been so much fun to see these players.
Yeah, I think that's very reasonable to say. It's like you know, it lands like, let's see how the finale goes. But you know, if it lands like top 7. I think that's probably fine.
Stops. I do. I think it will really be like 10-9. But you know.
Okay. All right. Listen. You wanna rank things? I know that's you like that. We'll come back in the off season. We'll figure it all out. Okay.
Oh, I love the idea.
All right. All right. Thank you guys so much. Thanks so much to Scott St. Pierre behind the scenes. Take care, everybody. Have a good one. Bye.
Bye.